How disappointing. Obviously, this has been a really good series for you guys up until that eighth inning. How disappointing that that has to end in that way.
Yeah, I mean, you know, we ended up splitting the series here, but felt like we gave that one away. You know, we were sloppy today. We didn't play well. And it cost us there. But, you know, we got to turn the page and get ready for a new series.
It's another edition of the Talking Mets podcast here on this Friday, June the 6th, 2025. Of course, I'm your host, Mike Silva. You can check me out all the time at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at TalkingMetsNoG and on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. NoG, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You can get me on Instagram, TalkingMetsNoG, and don't forget the newsletter, substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I'd love to thank the good folks on the Fan Sided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. Welcome to a late week edition of the Talking Mets podcast. I thought it was appropriate after the four-game series in L.A. A lot going on there. Tough afternoon loss, late afternoon loss here on the East Coast. Obviously, the old business person special getaway game out in L.A., Mets split the series. Wanted to come to you and pretty much give you a little bit of a State of the Union. It was weird because on Monday when I did the show, it was a tweener show. You know, the Mets had just took care of business against Chicago and Colorado, and they go back to Colorado with a true stub-your-toes series this weekend. And there's not a lot really to surmise from those series. You got to win those series. If you lose, there's more of a show. There's more of a story. But the big story over the next week was this L.A. series. And the Mets had played the Dodgers a couple of nationally televised games a couple of weeks ago. Or actually just about a week ago or so at Citi Field. I think a lot, like I said, of that series, as much as that was a glamour series, it got overshadowed by the fact that, A, the Knicks are in the postseason. And I think that really played a big part into it getting a little overshadowed at that point. And then the following week, Yankees played Dodgers. You know, the media is always, you know, in LA, they're always going to make that to be glamorous. And the Mets kind of got squeezed there. But the Mets and Dodgers were on full center stage here over the last few days. And unfortunately, because it's a West Coast game, a lot of these are in the middle of the night. Not sure how many of you watch these dramatic games live. But of course, if you had the MLB TV package, you could get all the action after. And this was, and I had said, you know, how the Subway Series was a test, kind of the first chance to get the juices flowing about how a postseason environment would be. And anytime you face your division rivals like the Phillies, it's the test. How do we match up with these teams? And early in the season, you're getting through that getting to know you phase, but we had clearly defined who the Mets were. We talked about this already a lot. And at this point, you're looking at, you know, what does this team need? And logically, and the narrative that you're hearing from the series going into the series, did the Mets close the gap on the Dodgers? Are the Mets able to compete with the Dodgers in the postseason? And a lot of that is old school sports talk. You see it a lot in baseball. You see it even more in the NBA. NBA postseason sport. NHL is obviously a postseason sport. But Those benchmark games during the season when you're playing a championship contender, whether it's at home or on the road, or you have a big win against a team that you're expected to match up with in the postseason, a lot of referendums are put out there. You saw it this past season with the Knicks, who struggled mightily at every single checkpoint of a big series in the regular season against the contending team. I believe they didn't win any of them. And you know, then you know what happened in the postseason, and they didn't make it. In the end, they didn't fulfill their goal at the end, but it was for a far different reason than what was spewed out in December, January, February, and what have you. And a lot of times, we try to create narratives, and the Dodgers are a huge narrative. And this team is a good team. And the fact that they're having some pitching problems really, to me, is the only thing holding them back from really having a dominating, I mean, truly, they could have a 98 Yankees, 01 Mariners type season with the roster they put together, especially on the offensive side. And the fear I think a lot of people had, and I don't really know if I talked about it during the offseason, but as the Mets are making their ascension and they're putting in this infrastructure and putting the David Stearns stamp on everything and becoming a truly sustainable contender, spending money, hopefully as time goes on, the farm system provides a bigger piece of the roster and not just surrounding component, useful pieces, real impact pieces, so they don't have to go out and buy everything. And as they're making this ascension, the fear you have here is the Dodgers have been doing this for over a decade, and they have a World Championship. And they even though you want to delegitimize it, I have that COVID championship, they just put a stamp on everything, and they won a real title just this past October. And it was, in a lot of ways, I started to wonder, especially if you have these short windows and things could turn fast in baseball. Injuries, lack of development, aging out, whatever have you. So everybody's got a window. I know the Yankees have won, you know, it seemed they've won before Bill Clinton was president. They started winning. And they you worry that you're going to get caught up where you're good, you do a lot of good things, you do all the right things, but there's a team that's just perfect or really good in front of you. Think 90s Yankees with teams like Texas and Baltimore and the Red Sox and Cleveland. Really good teams in the late 90s. They had the Yankees in front of them, and that buzzsaw was just, it was there. You weren't going to overcome it. So your really good seasons didn't become special seasons. In the NBA, we talk about it all the time. In the 80s, the Lakers, teams in the Western Conference knew, we're playing for second place. The Lakers are too good. So what do? I got to figure out a way to go there. 90s Bulls. Jordan, we know the whole narrative there. And then eventually it gets to the point, you know, even when Miami had their big three, veterans want to go there because they're like, hey, my only chance to win a championship is going to that team. Because there's only one or two other teams in my conference, they're already, you know, there, so I'm not going to win. So your fear is that that's the Dodgers right now in the National League because they're the cream of the crop. They do everything well, and they're spending money, and they're a desired location, especially for the Japanese athlete. But baseball, and every sport truly is a playoff sport, but baseball is a tournament. And no matter how, and the Mets had a really good showing against the Dodgers. I mean, they blew some really tough games. They easily could have won all seven. And I said to somebody yesterday, I was talking socially, and I said, I'm kind of happy they didn't. I know that's crazy to say, because going into the postseason with a perfect record against the Dodgers, in a lot of ways puts so much pressure, because you know what the narrative would be on the Mets, and obviously the law of averages and the worm is going to turn. Silly talk, I know you never want to give away games, no matter when, especially against a team like the Dodgers, you want to make your statement. Now, I didn't want them to give away three games, which in essence they did, but whatever these teams are now, really is not going to matter come October. It's a good barometer to see where the Mets are at. And clearly, the best barometer of where the Mets are at is how sustainable their pitching is. Even without going out and signing Snell or Burns or over the last couple of years trying to find a big arm or big name, an established name, the Mets have put as up there with the kind of pitching staff that, look, the Phillies, who have a really good starting rotation, Mets are right there with them. And they don't have a big name like a Wheeler or a Nola. Or a big-time prospect like Luzardo has been. So it is a good way of saying, okay, you know, certain parts of the team, do you need to improve it? And that's exactly where we are as the, what does this team need? That's really what it is. But it's not a barometer or a referendum on how good or not good the Dodgers are, how good or not good the Mets are. Because by the time the October hits, if these two teams play, there's a lot of story left to be told. There's a trade deadline. There's injuries. I mean, the Mets didn't even face Snell. They didn't face Yamamoto. Who knows if Snell's coming back? I know he's got shoulder issues. I mean, their pitching is taking a beating. You know the Dodgers, even if the relievers go down, and they have, they're going to find arms. Urane is out there. The guy couldn't get anybody out in D.C. about a month ago. He's out there getting outs. I mean, that's crazy when you think about it. They just, pitchers go there, and the Mets are starting to see a little bit. And they, you know, do their thing. They do their thing, and that's what it's been since the beginning of time. I mean, Jose Urena, 33 years old, Texas, Toronto dumps him. I mean, he could barely pitch three innings in a 10-run game and get not through it. And here he is. He's got three really solid innings in LA. It's amazing at that point. So I think the biggest thing is, no, this isn't the 80s, even though I think they are the 90s Bulls, the 80s Lakers in a lot of ways. And I think some injuries and maybe that's the variability of baseball have played into them instead of being all-time crazy good or elite or all-time, being very, very good. But I even at that point, even with the Dodgers being who they were or we thought they were going to be, I didn't feel the gap was as wide as people thought after watching the Mets in October. I mean, the Mets took them to six games. They won a couple of games. I know that the Dodgers went out to Citi Field and turned it into a launching pad in games 3 and 4. In a lot of ways, and we talked about this in the last few weeks, the Mets had no business being in the championship series with the kind of walks and the kind of base runners they had to navigate throughout the regular season. They were in a position where they were able to shut down the Brewers in a three-game series, which that could happen anytime. And the bullpen was pretty good in that series. The Phillies, and whether you want to say it was because they chased or whatever, they had some spottiness, the bullpen, especially in Philadelphia. But once they got to Citi Field, they clamped that series down and they didn't let go of it. They didn't get to a game 5 in Philly. Who knows what would have happened there. But you knew that eventually that team, especially that bullpen, was going to put runners on base. And they were going to put too many runners on base and they were going to have to pitch out of trouble. And it's just very hard to do against this Dodgers team. Part of why they lost in the 8th inning yesterday, Reed Garrett walking the leadoff man. I know it's Mookie Betts, but still. So as much as the Mets had this gap, I thought that, and it's not an easy thing to fix, getting better pitchers who don't walk batters. I didn't think it was this insurmountable type of situation. I said, look, you keep runners off base, you get that thing to game 7. Who the hell knows what happens last October? It was not this wide divide. And when you saw the Yankees, even though they lost in 5, played a few more closer games than the Mets did, it's because their pitching was better, and they didn't walk batters. It was as simple as that. I mean, yeah, the Yankees stubbed themselves in the toe defensively, which is really why I think they're smarting from that series and thinking it was a lost opportunity, even though I think the Dodgers would have found a way to win. The Dodgers were fallible, and they've been because they're at that point they're pitching when they're using bullpen openers and what have you, and then they go out and they try to fix it through free agency. The pitching has been that great equalizer, and pitching is so variable, and especially with health and what have you. So I never felt that the Mets had this wide gap, but you did want to see how they were. Are they better positioned to win in October? And the answer is yes. But I think it goes back to what you saw the last few days, exactly what we're watching between now and the trade deadline. And I don't know if it could be fixed. It may have to be something that you live with your personnel. But the young players as the supporting cast in their development and the bridge to Diaz are really the two things you saw on display that help them at times and came up big at times in the last few days and also hurt them and made you wonder, are they ready for the big time? Look, the Dodgers' offense is incredible. I don't care what Soto does the rest of the year, how good Soto is. Alonso, he is as locked in and maybe has benefited from Soto more than anybody, which is amazing because he's batting behind Soto. So you would think he would be the one asked to help Soto. And we know he's not Aaron Judge, but Soto can't complain about protection. Now, they walk Soto to get to him. The league still says Soto v. Pete. I'll go Pete, but who knows if that's going to continue because Pete's as locked in as you're going to get. But even with all that, this Dodgers offense, I mean, I just look at it, and the fact that the Mets were able to shut it down for large periods, especially in the first 6 innings, it's actually pretty incredible. I mean, you've got Ohtani. You've got Mookie Betts, who is off to his slowest start as Soto, maybe worse, and nobody's saying anything. You've got Freddie Freeman, who has gotten better as a hitter the older he gets. Here's a guy 35 years old. He's better, I think, than he was with Atlanta, if that's a thing. Will Smith, catcher, elite offensive player. And then you look at the component players, quote unquote, Muncy, Pájez, to Oscar Hernandez. These, I mean, this is the part of the lineup you breathe a little bit and you're like, all right, I can navigate this. And these are good hitters. And then that doesn't even include the bottom where at some point, Kiki Hernandez, if it's the postseason, drives you bananas. And Michael Conforto's having an awful, awful year. He's lost to the doldrums. And we've seen that as Mets fans where he goes into these periods where he can't hit. He drives you crazy. But when he's on and he got the big hit yesterday in the eighth inning, Conforto, I mean, at the bottom of the lineup, Conforto was a middle of the order, a hitter that the Mets were thinking of signing to a long-term contract to be a core offensive player not too long ago. So it's amazing. It's amazing that of the amount of offense that is on this team that you have to navigate. And if you're going to navigate this offense, you're going to need a good bullpen. And Diaz versus Tanner Scott, I know that Scott got the best of Diaz. If you look at Scott's numbers, he struggled this year. I wasn't a believer that Scott was a guy, not saying I wouldn't want him, but he's not a guy I'd give Diaz money and put him in the same class as the elite closer. I thought he walked too many hitters. I thought he had some outlying statistics the last couple of years leading from Miami to San Diego, and I thought it was insane to give him a four-year deal at the level of money that he got, putting himself in the Diaz category. Dodgers did it. Dodgers don't care. They could burn that money, and the Dodgers are confident, as well as they should be, that they could take whatever they got out of these bullpen arms or these pitchers and get the best version of them that they can. They haven't done it yet with Scott, but look, Scott versus Diaz, give me Diaz. Diaz blew his first save. You know, a little bit, he got hit. Wasn't like he got pounded. He didn't walk the ballpark. He didn't beat himself. He got beat because that's a good offense. So Diaz, an elite closer, who is going to ultimately probably, if the Mets win, play the Dodgers, will probably be the reason they win or lose, because no matter what they do on the starting pitching side and how they hit, it's going to come down to those three outs in the ninth inning. And they just got Tanner Scott on one side and Diaz on the other, and we'll see who's better than that. Round two goes to Scott. Round one, Diaz did well. Diaz pitched what? He pitched back-to-back games Friday, Saturday in New York. And then obviously wasn't available in the game that Brazenbaum blew. But, he pitched, blew the save in game one. And then, didn't have an opportunity here to pitch. Scott did a couple of times. So that's part of it. And then there's the bridge to the bullpen. And I said to you guys many, many times that one of the things the Mets need to do, and I think one of the things that most hurt from Minter going down, was not just that he's a lefty and how he could come in. I mean, think about Minter, how important he was going to be to face Freeman, Otani with Betts sandwiched in between. That was the part of the lineup that, I mean, you could make the argument maybe Mendoza could have went Diaz in the eighth inning to go to that part of the lineup, then go with Garrett against the mid to bottom part of the order. I think if it was later in the year or the postseason, you might have seen that if the Mets are in the middle of a race at a level where the margin of error is less. I think he wanted to see what Garrett had. Garrett has been one of the names that I've put as a breakout reliever. Garrett's a guy that has tons of potential, and he's had a good year, even though he's had patches where he's lost his command, his control. But let's face it, the questions I had coming in with Brazenbaum and Garrett is not that they aren't useful relievers or have had really good years. The issue I've had with both of them, and particularly Garrett with the walks, he's symptomatic, or his inning yesterday was symptomatic of the issues the Mets had against the Dodgers and in large part out of the bullpen all of last year. He's a holdover. But it's also that when you're in that higher leverage situation, it does change the dynamic. Much different getting three outs against the White Sox in the eighth inning versus getting three outs against Otani, Betts, Freeman, or Betts, Freeman, Will Smith, you know, so on and so forth, whatever combination in the eighth inning on the road at Dodger Stadium. Now you have a Minter in there who's got experience, who's close, who comes from a championship situation in Atlanta. You have a higher level of faith that they can navigate that. I don't know if there's a second closer they could acquire, or like I had said, not that I want them to go out and get a David Robertson. He's been sitting on his couch. There's a reason for that at his age. But what they had planned on doing a couple of years ago before Diaz went down, they had that Robertson, that veteran eighth inning arm, second closer that they felt could provide that consistency to set up Diaz. That's what they need. And I don't know if Reed Garrett is that. I don't know if Brazenban is that. I'm guessing they're not. Stanek, I never believed he was. Buto is not that guy. And I thought Daniel Nunez might emerge, and that hasn't happened. So where they go, is it a starter? I mean, we even heard them say that Blackburn could, when he comes out of the bullpen, might be a high leverage reliever after his performance. So you saw right in front of you, this bridge needs reinforcements. It's a good bridge. It could get the job done to get to the postseason, to get to the tournament. But is it a bridge that could get big outs, particularly against an elite offensive team on the road? I mean, I'll say the same thing if they were facing the big Phillies hitters on the road or at home, Dodgers hitters, and so on and so forth. So so that's the second thing. Diaz versus Tanner Scott, that's just going to be mano a mano. May the best man win. Nothing you could do there. The bridge, you guys know I felt it needs to improve. And then the other thing, and we talked about it, and it's going to be a big conversation, are the young players, the supporting cast young players. Acuna, who now with Lindor having the toe situation, might get a little bit more time at short and be relied on to up his game a little bit. Vientos, interesting. We were talking about the roster crunch. We're talking about it over at Beyond the Mic. Mentioned it briefly during the show this past Sunday. And he pops a hamstring, and now Mauricio's up, and Marte's hitting. I mean, Marte's got a 115 OPS plus. It's funny. Every time you're ready to write Marte off because he's got this roster crunch, there he is. He's showing that his bat still has a little bit of life. And he's got that veteran leadership. So, although that was a bad play getting picked off third base. So, you have that. You have Mauricio, who didn't contribute, but now he's up, and hopefully he can provide you some offensive spark. Alvarez, big hit on Monday in extra innings, a little spotty behind the plate. Look, Beatty made the error yesterday in the eighth inning with that throw. But boy, how big would it have been if the catcher could have picked that? And I know it's a really tough play. You got to pick it, a really tough throw, and tag. And you're trying, your brain's trying to figure out two different things and two tough things while a runner's barreling down on you. So I'm not criticizing Alvarez, but it's just the synopsis, you know. Beatty botching a play, Alvarez not, you know, doing something elite or doing something next level to kind of, you know, save the day a little bit. Again, very unfair to even bring it up probably, but it came to my mind, so I put it out there into the universe here. On Beatty, he's made a lot of progress with the bat, and I'm not going to get crazy about the error because he's been so good at third base, and I don't even know if Vientos would have made that play. And right now, with Lindor out, and I'm not sure that Acuna is the best third baseman. We've seen him make bad plays there. Your best bet defensively late in ball games right now at third is Beatty. I mean, let's face it, it's Beatty. So you're going to have to live and die there with it. But remember, one of the biggest criticisms and one of the things he's been working on was the speed of the game, focus. And I don't think it was a focus issue, but it was a speed of the game issue that you saw there in the eighth inning where he took a ground ball, which, I mean, it was right there. For him to make the play, and who knows what would have happened. Maybe the Dodgers still tie the game and they go to extra innings and the Mets lose. So I'm not saying that the game was over there, but certainly that was where the thing really went bad. So Beatty plays into it, Alvarez, Acuna, Mauricio. In the long run, you have to be confident that the Nimmos and the Martes are going to do their component thing. When Winker gets back, but the real thing and the real part of this on the offensive and defensive side that will either lengthen the Mets lineup and give them some juice at the bottom third, where I think that's the biggest difference between the Mets and the Dodgers. Mets have a really good 1-2-3, even 4. Maybe you could certainly argue it's not as good as Ohtani, Betts, Freeman. I understand that, but it's not chopped liver. It's that they don't have high level complementary players doing what Muncy or Páez does with the bat. They don't have that yet. You were hoping Alvarez and Beatty might be that, but they're not yet. So that's going to be something. And if again, just you don't believe me, and things change a lot. The Braves now are starting to fade after a terrible loss. So, you know, the sellers might become teams that you're not even thinking about. Now, are they going to sell to the Mets and even make it an option? I mean, come on. We don't know. And the odds are they won't. But you don't know who's going to be available. But logically, if you start to look at who the teams that are bad, teams that are not contenders, the logical ones, ones that around the trade deadline of July 31st might, you know, there's still going to be teams that are going to believe they can make a wild card run. I don't think that anything's going to get away from everybody. I mean, maybe the National League will be a little bit tougher, but in the American League, I don't think you're going to see people waving the white flag as much by the 31st, because I think there's going to be a lot of teams that have a shot at getting into the tournament. And again, you get into that tournament, anything could happen. But, you know, there's not a lot of help out there. That you know, you probably get a bullpen arm. And can you get a higher level bullpen arm, one that is better than Brazenbaum and Reed Garrett, that's more of a guarantee, or someone that's closing for a team out of contention? I mean, I'm not so sure right now. And I certainly don't know if third base becomes a black hole with Vientos, Mauricio, and Beatty, and there's not a lot of third basemen out there you can go out and get. So you're pretty much, let's put it this way. And you have a lot of baseball between now and the 31st of July, but it comes quick. What you have in front of you is pretty much what you have to look at and say, is this going to be good enough? And so far in LA, these last couple of days, it's not. Where everything was done to the blueprint. The starting pitching got it into the seventh inning. Actually, Peterson got through the seventh inning. And I know, could he have kept Peterson out another inning? Yes, that's possible. But he got it. He made a big pitch to Otani. There's a lot of stress on that. And Mendoza's like, all right, let's go to my bridge. And I mean, you're asking the bridge for three outs. They should be able to do that. And if they can't, you're not winning a championship. You might not win a postseason series. If that's where you're at, where you can't get three outs to Diaz, and I'm not saying that it's all going to be because of Otani, Betts, and those guys, that's a different level. But if you can't get three outs, then you know you don't deserve to win at that point. Look at the Dodgers last year. I mean, can the Mets go out and find their Michael Kopech? I mean, they had Blake Treinen in that bullpen, Daniel Hudson. I'm not saying these guys are Trevor Hoffman and Mariano Rivera. It's not like I'm asking for you to go out and get a Hall of Fame second closer. Would love to. Would love to have a Goose, Sparky, Lyle tandem, right? But these are guys that have closed at a high level, and easily could slide into either a pseudo-closer when Diaz is not available, or in the postseason, allow you to use Diaz in the ninth, or if you want to use Diaz in the high leverage situation, if that's in the eighth. What you can't do is hold Diaz back and say, okay, the highest leverage situation, the seventh, eighth, or ninth, is when you come in. I don't think he does well on that. I don't think he does well with runners on base. You need to put Diaz in a position to succeed. And typically that's coming out to his song in the ninth inning and putting the cap on the ball game. And maybe coming in the eighth inning, but you're going to have to rely on the seventh and eighth inning, because that's where the six outs right now, unless something diametrically changes with the starting pitching, those six outs are going to have to be done by the Brazenbaums, the Reed Garretts, the Ryan Stanics. You know, maybe Nunez gets involved back into it. You know, I know Brooks, I failed to mention the fact that the Mets do have some left-handed cavalry on the way in Brooks Raley. Right now they're using Castillo. I don't like to rely on any Tommy John, even though he'll be like a year out by the time he's ready, Tommy John recipient, because I have no idea what you're going to get just, you know, out of Tommy John surgery. Same thing with Drew Smith, who I wasn't a huge fan of when he was healthy. I didn't think he was a high leverage reliever. I thought he was a sixth or seventh inning arm. And a guy that gave up home runs to boot. Maybe he'll be a different pitcher post-TJ surgery. So I'm not even thinking about those guys. I'm thinking about, you know, can they go out? And it's probably a couple arms, maybe a lefty. Would love to get an experienced lefty. And then, you know, who fits the bill? Who is their Michael Kopech? Who is their Daniel Hudson? Who is their Blake Treinen? Just to use Dodgers examples. You know, the Yankees went out last year. They got Luke Weaver and put him off the scrap heap and turned him into a serviceable, you know, became their closer. You know, I don't think that's the route. I want certainty. The Mets already have shown they could take lemons and make them into lemonade. I want certainty there. Because I feel good about Diaz, Vitan, or Scott. I think they'll score enough runs. I don't think the Dodgers' pitching is infallible. Even Yamamoto. We saw that Sunday when the Yankees were in town. I think the Mets can score 5-6 runs against the Dodgers. Can they hold the Dodgers to under 5 runs? The starting pitching is doing its part, but man, the you know, this team against bullpens that walk batters, get behind, or are not any good, they could score in bunches. I mean, they scored 3 runs in a blink of an eye in the 8th inning yesterday. I mean, they did it against Peterson in the 4th. I mean, that's the thing about these guys. You could shut them down, but once they get rolling, once the snowball, it's a snowball effect, and you have no chance to breathe. Top of the order is gnarly. You know that. Middle of the order, you could say, all right, it's a little bit more manageable, but it's not easy. And then the bottom, you don't even get a chance to breathe at the bottom of the order. Maybe against Kiki Hernandez, and you really can't. So if you think you're going to go into a postseason series with a bridge, or let's use Reed Garrett, who, again, I think has had a really good year and has continue to improve, and I had him as, I get, like I say all the time, my breakout reliever. But if you think you're going to go in and walk the leadoff batter in the 8th inning on the road and not throw strikes to those guys and make errors on top of it, and you're going to navigate that and sneak out with a win, you're not doing that. I don't care if it's in L.A., Citi Field, or the moon. You're not beating that team. You need to play as perfect as you can. You need to be better on, especially fundamentally defensively. You need to do your thing with the walks. And you need to get your outs, and you need to get the ball to Diaz. If you get the ball to Diaz and he doesn't do his thing and he hangs a slider, or he's just as bad with the walks and the sloppiness, then you don't deserve to win. But you hang your head high, because the blueprint is there. If Diaz is the reason why you lose, then it's just like you're not that good enough, and Diaz is not that good enough. But that's not what happened yesterday. You gave a game away. And Brazenbaum, same thing. I think Brazenbaum, I feel a little bit more faith in Brazenbaum because he doesn't walk as many batters, but he's shown, and he's backed up Diaz as a closer. He blows games. St. Louis, Pittsburgh. And I know that it was home runs in some of those. Some of those were dinks and fielding, but he has not been able to close games when he's been given the chance. It's always a mistake that happens, a hanger, usually to a lefty batter. So, a lot of positives to take away from the series here in LA. And I know that everybody's really disappointed, upset, and wants to make it a referendum on something negative. But throw that aside. Mets won the season series, so if there's a tie, just makes it easier for them to have home field advantage. I'm not so much sure that even matters against the Dodgers, but it ain't going to hurt. And it's not bad for Steve Cohen's pocket with the gate. And it's certainly fun to be able to, as a fan, if you so desire and have the means, to go to a postseason game against the Dodgers and give the Mets at least some kind of percentage chance extra to win a ball game because they have home field and they have the crowd. But throw it away, because now it's back to the work. It's back to taking care of business against Colorado. Don't sleep on the Nats. They're a team that I think, even though they're probably not going to finish any much better than 500, they're pesky. They got some offense. They got a couple of good arms. They're not a walkover. And you know, you have a ton of road games. Atlanta, I know Atlanta's been slumping, but who knows, you know, when that turns around. They're a veteran team with a lot of success. So this is not going to get any easier between now and the deadline. This was a 4 days to match yourself up against the best of the best, against the world champs. And you had a chance over 2 weeks to pretty much play a postseason series. And the Mets won that postseason series 4-3. And they could have won all 7 games. Clearly, regular season goes to the Mets. Not going to matter come October. Whenever they meet, division series, championship series, it's back to 0-0, and you're going to have to mow through that lineup, and who knows who's going to be on the mound for the Dodgers, and who knows who they pluck out of their farm system to get outs out of the bullpen, and who knows what bullpen arm they acquire. And oh, by the way, don't put it past them not to take a veteran component player and improve upon the offense. Already, that's really good. And that's if you have the privilege of meeting them in a championship series and you could get through the Phillies or the Cubs. So this ain't easy. And the things that are problems now that we're talking about are problems against the Dodgers. They're not just Dodgers, Mets problems. They're Mets problems against any team, whether they're a contender. And shoot, these are things that could undo them this weekend in Colorado against one of the worst teams. I mean, we may see the 62 Mets not get beaten once in this decade, but beaten twice with Colorado doing their own little impression. Talk about putting the Mets into the back burner of history in a good way. So that's that. But I want to thank everybody for tuning in to this late week edition of the Talking Mets podcast. I will be back on Sunday. The plan is to have our good friend, and I always say when I tease segments, anything could happen with the schedule, but our good friend Pat Ragazzo from Sports Illustrated is going to join me, so we'll get somebody to come into the Talking Mets cave here and maybe bounce some of their ideas off of the echo chamber of just me talking. It's been a while. And, you know, the Mets going to Colorado, trap series, stub your toe. It'd be very disappointing if they didn't take two out of three at least. I know everybody wants a sweep, but, you know, eventually the law of averages says the Rockies, even as bad as they are going to win some games. I'm glad they won a couple of games against the Marlins. You know, that helps a little bit. You don't want a team coming in that's been in a significant losing streak. So I'll see you on Sunday at that point. Of course, you can check me out in between at thetalkingmetspodcast.com. You get me on X at Talking Mets, no G. And on your favorite podcasting service, Apple, Spotify, pretty much whatever podcasting service you desire. If you want to interact with me, Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com, no G. Mike Silva at TalkingMetsPodcast.com. You get me on Instagram, TalkingMets, no G. And I'd love for you to subscribe to the newsletter for less than a cup of coffee a month, Substack.com/@TalkingMetsNoG. And I want to thank the good folks with Fansided Podcasting Network for supporting this show. I'm your host, Mike Silva. Enjoy your Friday. Enjoy your weekend. We'll be back with the Talking Mets podcast on this Sunday night. Till then, take care, everybody.
Meet the Mets, head for the park.